us, and we're going to continue with this theme this morning, and I have something that has been very an incredible blessing to me in doing all of this and preaching the last couple of weeks in the other locations, and I'm sure it will be a blessing to you this morning. We remember in verses 6 and 7 of Exodus 6, God says to Moses, well, let me just back up a little bit. A number of weeks ago, I preached out here, and I preached out of Exodus chapter 3, and I spoke about Moses. You know, you know his story, don't you? Yeah? I'll just refresh your memory. You know, he was born, he's born to a Levite man, a Levite woman, no names mentioned. He was put down the Nile, and Pharaoh's daughter found him. Pharaoh's daughter names him. He's brought up in Pharaoh's castle, in Pharaoh's palace, and he murders somebody. He goes on the run. He's 40 years of age when he goes on the run. He meets Zipporah, who was Jethro's daughter, who becomes his wife. They have a baby. He calls the baby Gershom. I don't know whether I told you this the last one, but Gershom actually means I feel like an alien. And then when he meets God, you know, here's a man, he's now 80 years of age. He lived in the refinery of the palace, brought up in the education of the palace, became a murderer. Didn't know who he really was. Am I Pharaoh's daughter's son? Am I your woman's son? Who was my dad? Where am I going? Where am I from? Where do you come from? Sounds like a song. Cotton Eye Joe. And who's your mommy? But he just doesn't know. Even when he has a son, it comes out in his children. Gershom, I don't know who I am. I feel like an alien in this place. And he meets God. And God calls his name. That's the first thing. God knew him. And God says to him, if I had to ask you this from memory, you'd probably answer like I would have. When God spoke to him, he says, I'm the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That's what I would have done from memory. But God didn't say that. He says, first of all, I'm the God of your father. And then he says, I'm the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And what he was doing was, he was aligning Moses' identity with who created him. Look, you might know all these things, but I know these things. Because the reality is, if we don't know our identity, we will never fulfill our destiny. And God was setting right there and then the baseline of everything else that was going to come along in the life of Moses, in the life of the future of Israel, or the future that Israel was to be. And it's an incredible thing to know who you are. And not only who you are, but who's your God, and that God knows every detail about us and has a plan and a purpose for our lives. And he sends them into the people of God. Now imagine, you're going to go in and try to convince the elders of Israel, of the Hebrews at the time. You're going to go in to convince them to follow you. And if you don't know your identity in God, like imagine, you know, here's how it works for us. Tell me if I'm wrong. I don't know who I am, where I'm from, where I'm going. Who's me ma? Who's me da? Or look, even me children are paying the price. Come in here, I'm an alien, and get your dinner. Like, you wouldn't, everything being played out in the life of Moses. He goes to the people of Israel without his identity being established in God. And the people say to him, why should we follow you? Who are you? What's your lineage? Are you the murder guy that ran away 40 years ago that was in the news? Do you know what happens when you don't know your identity in Christ? You don't know you're forgiven. You don't know that God has cleansed you. You start to recoil into yourself. Gosh, who am I? Where am I going? What's this all about? And God establishes so that Moses is able to go in and he's able to say to the people of Israel and the elders, these were 400 years in bondage. 400 years they had no identity. They had no emblems of being a nation. They had no national flag. They had no voice. They had no sound. It even says, Ray Hughes told us this, that when the people of Israel, when they would talk, that the slave masters had this, like a timbrel, it's called. It's like where a tambourine comes from. And if they were talking in a loud voice, an audible voice, that linguistic people seen, found writings and all this, that when they would talk, that the people would do the shaker thing in their face. Like, so Carol is talking a bit above a bit of volume to someone else, and they go, shh, meaning shut up, you've no voice, you've nothing to say. So he was going in to convince these people that now the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob was speaking to him to go into them. And if he didn't know who he was in Christ, in God, well, then they weren't going to follow him, or he hadn't got the confidence in going in. And he goes in and he says, this is what God says. I will bring you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians. I'll save you. I will free you from being slaves. I will deliver you from being slaves. I will redeem you with an outstretched arm, a mighty axe. I will take you as my own people, and I will give you, and I will be your God. Then you will know that I am the Lord your God who brought you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians. And I will bring you to the land I swore and with uplifted hand to give to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. I will give it to you as a possession. I am the Lord. After that, the elders bowed down and worshiped. There was none of this, who am I? Wasn't this going in timid? It wasn't this, it's like God has spoke to me and I'm going to go in and I'm going to bring you out of this place. And God established his identity. But here's what God done first. He called Moses out of Egypt at that burning bush. See, Moses, I'm going to save you from this existence. I'm going to save you from not knowing who you are. I'm going to save you from not knowing a purpose or a plan for your life. And he speaks to him. And what he done in Moses, he says, now you're going to go in and you're going to deal with a whole people. And you know, as Rob and Mags has been talking about the four cups over the last couple of weeks, that the Passover had four cups. And the first one was the cup of sanctification, the cup of being called out once, the cup of being brought out from underneath a bondage. God is into saving. And the confidence that this gives me, that God says, I will save out of Egypt. And Egypt can be living in the world system. Egypt can be living in sin. And God is committed to calling people and saving people out of the world system, out of the Egyptian lifestyle. But God wants to save us so that we can know who we are in him. That God has a plan and God knew everything about us. He knows everything about us and loves us the most. He knows every detail of our lives. He's like, I have a plan and I have a purpose. And I saved you. And I went and found you. And I went and found you in your miserable place. I went and found you under the yoke of sin. He came and found us. He came and brought those people into our world. That message, wherever it was, he was the one that he is committed to doing this. And Jesus, when he says, do this in remembrance of me, what is he saying to remember? That I will save. I will redeem, I will deliver, I will bring it all to fulfillment to the place of praise. I will do this. And the confidence we have to have for our loved ones and our towns and our cities and even our nation is that God is committed to bringing people out of bondage. And yet everyone gets a choice. And I want to take the next 15 minutes to tell you a story of identity and choices that we have to make around their identity. I don't know whether you ever heard this parable called the parable of the acrobats. It's a bit hard to get your tongue around. Well, it is for me. I want to tell you the story. It's this acrobatic troupe back in the day where you needed horse and carriages and wagons to bring you from town to town to do the performance. And the greatest acrobats in the troupe in the world, commissioned by kings, like loved by everybody, like there was no one like them in the world. And in that greatest acrobatic troupe, there was the greatest male acrobat and the greatest female acrobats. And there was nobody like them in the whole world. The male acrobat and the female acrobat gets together, gets married, and she comes pregnant. The whole future and community of the acrobatic troupe was so excited about this pregnancy, because they were thinking, because of the baby's birthright and the baby's DNA, imagine what type of acrobat this baby is going to be. Because we're the greatest troupe and the greatest male and the greatest female acrobat now having a baby, and this baby is going to be something else as an acrobat because of its DNA and because of its birthright. And so everybody was looking forward to this. The future even of the troupe was dependent on this baby being the best in the world because of his DNA and his birthright. And so anyway, they have a little baby boy. The whole community is celebrating this for days and days, that the baby was born, and it was born a little boy. And this is what made a tragic night all the more painful. One night as they were traveling, the baby in the back of a wagon, in the cart in the middle of the night, somehow gone over bumps, the cart falls over, the baby falls out of the wagon. Hours and hours later, when they wake up, the mother realized the baby is gone. Devastated, as you can imagine, the whole troop going back for miles and miles, seeing can they discover the baby in a ditch or in a field. And as it became dark, they had to give up hope after going back hours of walking and looking and coming to the place of thinking the worst possible scenario, maybe a wild animal has got the baby and the baby is dead. Night falls and they have to move on, go back, and they've looked forever. Little did they know that when the baby fell out, that another horse and wagon was coming up along that trail, not seeing the troop in front of them. The woman looks on the ground, and farmer and his wife looks on the ground, and there's a baby, and there's a wrap on the ground with something moving. She gets off, and she finds the baby on the trail. Not seeing anyone for miles around, they don't know what to do. Funny enough with this farmer and his wife that they tried for babies for years and years and years, and she could never get pregnant. She'd given up hope about getting pregnant. She'd even give up talking about it because her husband being just a hardened man and a man of the earth, a man of the fields, like his emotions shut off. He wasn't really interested in talking even about this anymore. And now they find themselves with a little baby. Now they find themselves with, what will we do with this? Who owns this baby? Where did it come from? What's his name? All of the things you can imagine. So they decided, as you would, to bring the baby home. Now tell me this, and here's a question. Is the baby still an acrobat at that moment when the baby fell out of the car? Is the baby still the potential hope of the troop at that moment, even though it had traumatic circumstances from an early age? It is, because it is the DNA and its birthright that will determine the future, not traumatic events. The farmer and his wife, they don't know what to do with this baby. They never had kids. They were nervous. They didn't know how to feed. They didn't know how to do anything. They knew how to look after farm animals, but they didn't know how to look after a baby. The farmer makes up a little bed and puts them in. Question, is the baby still an acrobat, even though the farmer and his wife is raising the baby? The answer is yes, because it's DNA and birthright that will determine who you are, not the family in which you're raised in. Well, this little boy, as he got to 2 years of age, like, was more extreme than most little boys or girls at that age. And there was something in this little boy that wanted to climb, wanted to get up on things and get up to a higher place. There was something in this baby that wanted to get above ground and not be walking on ground, jumping up on different things. And the farmer and his wife, they didn't know what to do with a boy this age. There was something in the boy that was designed to defy gravity and not to beneath gravity. From the moment he could walk, there was something in this boy that he wanted to fly. The farmer and his wife would get upset because who wants to see that little boy climb on things? The mother, full of nerves and full of anxiety, would let her scream, "No, get down." And sometimes the farmer would even get annoyed, not because of the boy was climbing, but wanting to calm the nerves of his wife. And even at times, the little boy got a slap. And because of mommy's anxiety and daddy's fear factor, the little boy was caught in the middle of anxiety and fear that was speaking against him unknowingly, even to be himself. The farmer, not wanting his wife upset, would slap him many times. Age 2, he's keenly aware that his environment is against him and against who he truly is. Question. As that awareness of his environment becomes, of his environment being against him, is he still an acrobat? He is. Because it's not our environment, even if it's against us, that determines who we are. It's our DNA and our birthright. And as he gets older, he's a bit more cuter. He'd wait till the mom and dad get out. And when they're out in the field, he would go climbing. His goal was to get up on top of the fridge freezer. And the farmer is out and he ends up climbing up on the presses, up on everything to get up to the top of the fridge freezer. And he's standing up on the fridge freezer, feeling fully alive, not even knowing why this would all go off inside of him, but feeling fully alive to be above everything and to see everything from a view from the fridge freezer. Not the places he used to walk and crawl, now he was above it. And he's standing there just looking at everything, adrenaline rushing around him, the buzz that was inside of him. Not knowing what was going on, the farmer and his wife walks in. The mother lets a scream. The fear kicked off. The farmer kicks off. He grabs him and slaps him hard. Somewhere deep in his heart, he says, "I will never allow myself to be that person again because of what it's creating in our house." At that moment when he turns, when his heart turns, is he still an acrobat? We must hear this. His birthright and his DNA determines who he is, not the turning of his heart or the leaning of his soul. Age 10, the farmer decides to bring him out into the fields to show him what it is to be a farmer. Now he's out in the big fields and he sees all the trees and his eyes is caught as the wind blows the trees and the adrenaline kicks in again. This DNA that he doesn't even know why it's in there kicks off and he's looking at the trees thinking, imagine what it's like to be up on those trees and to be looking at the world from that point of view. Imagine what it's like to feel the wind in your face at that top, at that height. Imagine what it'd be like to leap and jump off that height. The farmer looks at him, lets a roar at him, and snaps him into reality, saying, don't be looking up. You're to look down because that's where you're going to earn your bread from. That's where you're going to earn your living from, the ground, not the treetops. Remember, the farmer doesn't know about his DNA. Remember, the farmer doesn't know about the troop or about his birthright. But as he planted seeds in the ground, as the boy worked hard, he got approval from the farmer. So he discovers that not only can he be saved from pain and avoid pain of not being himself, but he could also gain approval of being someone else's version of himself. Years go by, and he glances up for a moment at the top of a tree. The tree blowing in the wind. He's plowing the field. His foot gets caught in between some rocks and the plow moves on with the horses and he twists his leg, his foot. He lets a scream. The farmer goes, what are you doing? He doesn't tell him about the pain. He ignores his pain just so that he could get more approval from the farmer. He's like, oh, it's okay. There's nothing really wrong. And he goes on with his limp and develops that painful limp. Mixing with friends when he's a teenager wasn't that easy for him. He became an angry person. He didn't know why he was angry, but he'd lose his head at a drop of a hat. Instead of dominating gravity himself, he starts to dominate other people. He doesn't really like this about himself, so instead of dominating people, he withdraws from people and he stays on his own a lot. What happens next is like most miracles or most breakthroughs in life. It came unexpected. He goes to the store for his parents, gets some seed, and while he was in the store, he sees a poster. And on the poster, there's a man on a trapeze flying through the air. Another part of the poster, somebody running and jumping on some type of apparatus and flying in the air like doing a twirl, a tumble in the air. And the little boy, the 17-year-old now, looks at it and something comes alive in him when he sees this in excitement. So much that he runs home and he says to his mom and dad, look, I want to go and see this. We have to go and see this. The mom and dad promise him that if they do all their chores, they'll be able to go and see. The trapeze artist, the troop, was back in town 17 years later. Needless to say, he couldn't wait to go. That night, he could hardly sleep, but when he got asleep, he has a dream. And in the dream, instead of the man flying through the air on the trapeze, it's him. He wakes up in the morning, couldn't wait to do all the chores just to get to the place. Anyway, to go, he couldn't sit down. He stood up through the whole performance of men and women flying through the air and catching each other and going from one beam to the next beam, one high bar to the next high bar, one trapeze to the next trapeze, catching each other, flying through the air. He's standing there. He couldn't sit for one moment. He stood through the whole show. After the show, he could go down, actually, and say hello to people. There was a greet and meet with the troupe. So he goes down and he meets the people and he's touching the apparatus. He's shaking hands and the farmer and his wife are standing there watching him intently. Beside the farmer and his wife, another man and woman comes up. They were members of the troop. The mother, the woman of the troop says to the farmer and his wife, that's your son. You go, yeah, it's a long story, but yeah, he's our son. She goes, I can tell the boy by the way you're watching him. The farmer woman says, I watch him all the time because I'd hate to ever get him lost. Well, the woman recoils into herself, remembering the day her baby was lost. Remembering the day in seconds of her baby disappearing in the middle of the night. The man says to the farmer, what do you mean it's a long story? The farmer goes into the story of coming home one night and finding a bundle on the ground. Finding this little baby, and we raised him. How old is he? The woman said, 17 years of age now. What? When was you found this baby? What was the baby wearing? Because the mother, the acrobat's real mother, remembered everything, what he was wearing. Maybe even the amount of hairs he had on his head, what he was wrapped in. The farmer woman described them. They started telling their story to the farmer and his wife about when they lost their kid. And he came to the realization that they're talking about the same baby, the same boy, who was now 17 years of age. The boy walks up to the mom and dad, knowing there was something wrong. Not because his mother looked a bit upset, but because the man looked upset. The farmer man says to him, he said, son, come here. We need to tell you some things. That disturbed him more because he'd never been called son by the farmer. The farmer always treated him like a farmhand. Talked to him that way. And now he was calling him son. He looks at the acrobatic mother and father, man and woman, and he knows there's something going on. He's 17. He can pick these things up. And the farmer man says to him, son, who you think we are is not really who we are. And who you think you are is not really who you are. And the four of them sit down with the boy and they have this conversation. He's confused, needless to say. He doesn't know what's going on. Is this some type of joke? But he's thinking of all the times when he climbed and all the desires that was in him was now making sense. It was now coming to a realization of wanting to defy gravity was something to do with his birthright and his DNA. He's left with a decision. I stay with the farmer and his wife because that's what I know. That's where I'm from. I know how to toil the earth. I know how to work hard. Or I go with these strangers who they say are my real parents, who the farmers say are my real parents, and I could possibly live out the dream of being all I was supposed to be with them. Needless to say, left with a hard decision, torn between the familiar and the dreams that's inside them that's now fully alive. I don't think I've ever preached that and not mentioned a song, but a song comes to my mind, should I stay or should I go? What will I do? See, the Israelites had the same. Do I go with Moses or stay with the familiar? Do I stay with the Egyptians that I know? It's cruel, it's oppressive, but I know. Or do I trust? He's saying that God has a plan and a future and wants to call us out and has promised that he will make us his set apart people. He will save us from this tyranny of the Egyptians. They know quite well, if you give the Egyptians an inch, they become the ruler. Or will we go with Moses? Will we come out of this place? Or will I stay? We've had traumatic things in our life, but does that determine what God has for us? See, when God came, because Jesus was God, he was looking for the lost son and the lost daughter. He was looking for the ones that he has plans and purpose for, and he's come to find us. And we were left with that choice, and you're left with that choice. And even as believers, we're left with a choice. Do I stay with the familiar or do I trust this God that has a plan and a purpose for our life to impact this world with his love and his grace? Or do I just stay on the farm and just go to church and just fill in the boxes? Blah, 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 blah. Or do I take a risk, even though I've fallen many times, do I take the risk? Even though I have a limp, will I take the risk? Even though I have the voice of the old farmer roaring at me, where do you think you're going? You look down, you don't dare look up. Or do I trust this God? Moses was left with that decision. The Hebrews were left with that decision. And we're left with that decision. The Apostle John says, yet to all who believe in him, to all who did receive him, to those who believe in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. You and I have the choice. Believe in him, we're given the rights as children of God. Jesus says this, the thief did come to steal, kill, and destroy. The devil is a destroyer. He's a thief. He's a robber. But Jesus said that he has come so that he may have life in all of his fullness. But let's add a little word in there. Jesus has come so you may have your life, the life that was designed for you by God, the life that was preordained for you. Ephesians 2:10, that you're God's workmanship. Doesn't matter where you were raised. You were only lent to the people to raise us. That he has formed us. He knew, had the plans and the purposes ordained even before the foundations of the earth. And we're left with the choice even today. God, I want this. God, it's hard to let go of Egypt. God, it's hard to shut off that voice. God, it's hard to just step out and trust that you have. But we have the choice. See, the little boy, imagine going back to the farm. Living on the farm, working on the farm, marrying a farmer, woman, farmer's daughter. But always dreaming, there was something else for me with that acrobatic troop. Imagine, I'm playing the field, but I'm supposed to be flying through the air. I can stay where I am as a Christian and knowing that God has dreams in our hearts and we're 70 years of age. I'm thinking, what if I would have just taken that risk with Jesus? What if I would have just stepped in here? What if I would have gotten that training? What if I would have started this ministry? Whatever. What if I would have gotten that job? What if I would have become the CEO of a large company with chickens and give them all for the great big giveaway? It's not a bad dream. Let's pray. I'm going to ask the worship team to come back. We have some minutes. We love you, Lord. Just if you would bow your head for one moment, and I don't know everyone here, but I don't know whether you're living on a farm. Someone says to me, have I got anything against farmers? No, look, it's a story, love. But you have a choice today. I don't know whether you've ever made that choice to say yes to Jesus. Yes, I believe that Jesus died for me, rose again for me, has a plan, has a kingdom to give to me. And I want to make that choice today. The Bible says whoever believes in him, he gives the right to be called sons and daughters of God.